This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Tass. Our next guest is Peter Khalil. Peter is the federal member for the Australian Labor Party for the seat of Wills, my local member. You know, when I drive past your office, you know, there's a couple of really, there's a shop not a long way away from there, which I won't talk about on air because some people don't agree with that sort of a shop. But there's also a fabulous grocery shop further up the street that is just awesome. And that part of Sydney Road, you know, the shops are just incredible. How do you, when you want to get something to eat there, you're absolutely overloaded
Aren't
with choice.
Choice.
Spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
That's the modern way. That's what with content on television, on radio, except for your program.
Well, of course.
That's just a...
Now, is this the first time you've been here since the election?
Since the election, yes. But I have been in the studio when you first opened up.
Yes, he was here.
No, well, I just wanted to say congratulations on winning the election.
And
not you, but government. There's been a change in government.
Well, he won his too.
Of course.
Well, it's a great feeling to be... In a new government,
Sitting on the right hand side of the speaker.
Well, we haven't had that opportunity yet.
No, that's July 26th.
25th of July. Yeah, that's right.
How does it feel, Peter, after all the years of work, to finally be on the government benches and to, you know, have direct input into the decisions and everything that government's going to make?
Well, that is a great question because you're in politics to actually implement your vision, your policies, to do things that make a difference to people's lives. And you can only really do it from government. I mean, you can help a lot of people in opposition and, you know, you work and serve your constituency, which I've done. And that's very, very satisfying. It gives you a sense of purpose to help people. But you can do it on a much grander scale or a bigger scale with your vision being implemented through the federal parliament and the executive power that you have.
And it's... Look, I wanted to. There's one issue that I have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about, and it's probably not in the way that you think. It's about staffing for independence.
Oh.
No. My position, I raise this.
I have an opinion too.
Okay. My position is, and I raised this with Josh Burns last week, but I actually believe all parliamentarians, whether they are opposition, whether they're backbench, whether they're crossbench, they deserve better resources. Mm-hmm. Now, I know.
Agreed.
You know, people go, oh, you know. Oh, it costs money, you know. The government has argued.
My question to Macca was, how do you determine what's the right level?
Well, you don't determine the right level by cutting it. And to use the argument, we're saving $1.5 million on this. Well, you could save that in Comcar in 1 week.
So it's not a question of saving money here. I agree with your premise, which is that there should be more resources. We get 4 electorate officers, and I represent 200,000 people. So we get thousands of people emailing us, coming to the office, and if you're really doing your job and helping and working for your constituency, it's not easy to do it with 4 people.
So you don't get an advisor?
No.
Okay. And do you get someone that runs your office in Canberra? Is that someone that comes up from the electorate office?
No, you get 4 full-time electorate staff.
Okay.
That's it. So my point about this, I think we should be treating every member of parliament with the respect that they deserve. They've got work to do. They've got to review legislation. They've got to work on the committees. They've got to make their contributions to debate in parliament. But I don't see the difference between, say, Michelle Anandaraja, who's the member for
Higgins,
and Monique Ryan, who's the member for Kooyong. They both have the same level of work. Are we really saying that because you're of a different party or you're an independent, that somehow you're going to work harder than a Labor MP or a minor party MP, whatever? Every MP should be allocated the same amount of resources, and then we could judge what that requirement is. And actually what's happened is the Prime Minister has said they had 4 additional staff on top of the 4 electorate staff. They've still got 1 extra staffer than every other MP, the Teals. And yet there is this kind of outrage about the fact that they've been, you know, they've had 3 staff removed. Well, they've still got more staff than us.
And more importantly, they actually have not been in Parliament, most of them. And here they are demanding something that they don't even know about yet, really, technically speaking.
Again, I think we should be working with every member of parliament on the crossbench in good faith around legislation and whether there are good ways to amend bills and so on and so forth. All of us have to do that work, Taz.
I said to Macca is that it's not about the number of people. It is about the support that's in place. Do you have the right you know, infrastructure, the right advice, the right policy briefs, the right codes of conduct, the all those sorts of things that actually help the whole machinery of government or parliament work better, rather than saying you're entitled to four pieces and go off and do your own
Well, I think the good thing is that Prime Minister Albanese has increased the resourcing and staffing of the Parliamentary Library, which is a fantastic
resource
for parliamentarians because they do a lot of research. And the code of conduct that you talked about, that's part of the Jenkins Review as well, and we're going to implement all the recommendations.
Yep.
We've got our own party codes of conduct as well.
Support for staffers, support for MPs, support for women. All the domestic violence stuff, all of those sorts of things, I think are probably more important than just allocating more staff.
And look,
that's my view.
And this is not. I think it's important to point out we do an important job. A lot of the public might think, oh, why should they get more staff? But you do have four staff to cover, you know, a lot of people. And if you're going to do your job properly, I think more resources would be helpful.
Okay, good. Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
Going there?
Winnie the Pooh, otherwise known as President Xi.
So you can say that here.
Well, I can. In Hong Kong, I'd be arrested. In fact, I'd disappear.
You might be arrested anyway,
I probably could.
You might disappear.
So you made some comments yesterday on Afternoon Briefing. You were talking about Hong Kong and the 25-year anniversary of the where the Chinese government first lied to the people of Hong Kong. They've been doing it for 25 years.
Mm.
President Xi said yesterday, you know, one country, two systems.
Well, that doesn't really apply anymore.
He's full of shit, isn't he?
Well, I sort of to quote, I quoted yesterday Chris Patten, who was the last governor of Hong Kong, and he actually nailed it, I think. He said that President Xi and the Communist Party are terrified of what Hong Kong actually stood for.
Yes.
Free press, freedom of speech, a democratic, governance, all of the things that we kind of take for granted terrifies them because that it actually threatens their total control of the territory. What's happened in the last couple of years is that there's been a complete erosion of democracy, free press, freedom of speech in Hong Kong. There's been attacks on the independence of the judiciary. The national security law that was put in place a couple of years ago, actually on the anniversary, on 1st of July a couple of years ago, has been used to arrest pro-democracy activists. So saying something like you said would actually, you are under the national security law because it actually applies to people outside of Hong Kong.
If I actually go to Hong Kong,
you would be arrested.
Or to China, I'd be arrested.
I'd do my best to get you out, Macca.
Would you?
I would.
Would you lead a... Perhaps you and Josh and...
We'd all end up in outrage.
Actually, I know who the rescue squad could be. It could be
is
you.
Is it worth your while, though, Peter?
To get Macca out? Yeah, absolutely.
It could be Peter, Josh Burns and Dean Smith. Dean could run a diversion.
Oh, help me.
So what this means, you know, the promises that Deng Xiaoping made, but that President Xi has broken, the people of Taiwan... What is the chance of the people of Taiwan going, oh, well, actually, you know, we think we should unite with the mainland and become a special administrative region?
It's a good question. I don't understand the CCP's strategy here because by repressing and the suppression that they've applied to Hong Kong in such a very, very harsh way sends a very clear message to Taiwan, and obviously the Taiwanese are looking at that thinking there's no way now we want to unify. And so I never understood the wolf warrior diplomacy, the aggressiveness, the coercion, all of that, because I would have thought that would be counterproductive for China's longer term objectives. So park that aside. I do have to say that the bravery, the courage of the people of Hong Kong has been remarkable. They have actually stood up, protested for their rights. A lot of them have been arrested. Thousands have been arrested and suppressed. So we should never give up on that and show solidarity.
And Tass has got a question, but I'd say about President Xi, one president, two faces.
Be very careful, Macca. Just be very careful.
When he travels.
Yes, I agree.
Just stick to
I'm going to change topic. Now that you're in government, Peter.
Yes, Tess.
Tell us, what's on your priority list of things to deliver for our community, for the rainbow communities?
In my electorate particularly or more broadly?
Nationwide. You are now a national government, so what's the government going to deliver for our people?
You talked about equality, and this is a really important point, because there are laws that you can put in place that lead the way as far as making changes to society, but there's also the culture of a government. There's also the way that the government engages with communities with respect and listens, consults, and that I'm seeing from our government already, in the sense that our engagement with the LGBTQI+ community and other communities, frankly, is – one of respect, mutual respect, but also listening to what is needed. And so that might, you know, translate into laws, particular laws, particular needs. And if we're addressing inequality, no matter the person's background, their gender, their sexuality, their ethnicity, their faith, whatever it might be, it's all about giving everyone an opportunity, regardless of their background, the same opportunity. And that, to me, is the starting principle.
Love us. That's a great principle. Now give us some concrete actions. What's the Albanese government going to deliver for us?
Are you talking about funding for Joy?
Well, it may be that. I'm actually more interested in legislative reform. Yeah. I mean, you've talked about a change in culture, and that's very much welcomed. I mean, we had experienced over the last 4 years or 3 years in particular, divisive politics, where members of our own community were thrown under the bus for political expediency. I know that's gone, and that's very refreshing, and that's very welcomed, but there is still work to be done.
Yeah, so there is. And if you're touching on the religious discrimination bill and that whole process and the way that was politicised and used as
shocking,
a wedge.
Shocking.
And the community was used as to wedge in politics and so on, that's all gone. And so I think when dealing with bills like that, when it comes to the sex discrimination bill or the racial discrimination bill or religious discrimination, it's going to be dealt with in a much more respectful way. And Mark Dreyfus has made that very, very clear, those commitments. And so I think that's something to watch there, because that bill is coming to Parliament as well. And he's discussed that publicly about what that process would entail. And I know he's been engaging with the community on that basis. So I think it's legislatively, that's the one coming over the horizon that might be problematic. If you're looking at more positive legislative change, well, I'd have to ask Mark about where we're going to go with that and what the needs are. And that's the listening process. That's the consultation part of it.
So can we expect to see a federal minister for equality?
That's a good idea.
Or a
parliamentary sec, even.
Or even a commissioner for equality?
Would you like to nominate me?
Ha ha, I'd love to nominate you. Go for it.
I think that's a great idea. I mean,
Tass would make a great commissioner.
Tass?
Yeah.
Are we just handing out jobs here on the radio? Yeah.
Why not?
But that's a great idea, actually. And that's something that we could talk to the Attorney General about.
Fantastic.
See what his thoughts are. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Even if it's a parliamentary secretary, just elevates it.
To look at those.
Puts it on the agenda.
Look at the legislative agenda, look at the legislation as it currently sits, see if there are gaps there that need to be addressed. That's a great idea.
What's your thoughts, Peter, to the Prime Minister's been overseas, has been to NATO and various places. The thing I found the most interesting is that music.
We're having a technical failure.
The thing I found most interesting, and perhaps you may not want to comment on this, is Anthony Albanese and Matthias Cormann sitting beside each other at the OECD.
Oh, yeah.
And Matthias Cormann taking different policy positions to what he'd had for the last 9 years. I give full points to the Prime Minister for his expression, which didn't change. It was, I expected, this is what makes politics really strange sometimes, isn't it?
Well, if you don't, I understand the problem with that, because if you're not genuine and you don't have authenticity and conviction around the things that you believe in when you're in politics, and then suddenly it appears after politics, I think that's a big problem. But on the broader issue around the Prime Minister being overseas at NATO, he's really repairing our relationships. You see the dinner that he's having with Macron and the warmth of that. It's all about resetting, repairing the relationships that had been damaged over a period of time under the coalition. And I think he's doing a particularly fantastic job in that space and had from the very get-go, immediately. So I'm encouraged by the very good start on that.
I think we're nearly out of time, Macca.
We are.
Yeah.
And you've got another event to go to.
I do.
Is it? Are you speaking? Are you eating? Are you opening? What's happening?
The Myanmar democracy protests
in
Federation Square this afternoon, and a Somali community event. So
fantastic.
Busy.
Are you the Minister for Multicultural Affairs?
No, I'm not. But
he's the member for Multicultural.
I was formerly a Victorian Multicultural Commissioner, actually.
Yes.
Were you?
Before politics. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Hmm. So very, very committed to diversity in all its forms.
He is.
Makes us. It's the strength of who we are. Actually,
it is. Mm. It is. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Macca. Thanks, Tass.
And we look forward to seeing you again soon. And if you bring some federal government money, all the better.
Thank you.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9 with Macca and Tass.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.